Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. David French of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. David is a veteran, he is a lawyer, and he writes very well for National Review, so we've definitely got a good person to fill Jim's shoes for the next couple of days here. David, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's an honor.
Well, let's draw on your legal expertise here and go with the big story that broke on Wednesday afternoon, and that's after a lot of people were starting to wonder if we'd ever get this list of prospective Donald Trump Supreme Court nominees. The Trump campaign did, in fact, unveil a list of 11, and Trump himself read off the list with Sean Hannity last night on the Fox News channel.
Stephen Colleton of Iowa, Allison Ide of Colorado, Raymond Gruender, and Raymond is from Missouri, Thomas Hardiman of Pennsylvania, Raymond Kethledge of Michigan, Joan Larson, also of Michigan, where I think I'm going to do very well, by the way, in the general election. I think we're going to do very well. Thomas Lee of Utah, William H. Pryor of Alabama, David Stress of Minnesota, Diane Sykes of Wisconsin, Don Willett of Texas, and that's your list.
So we clipped out a couple of the asides there. Lee of Utah is a brother of Senator Mike Lee, and you may remember that Judge Pryor was a very controversial nominee that eventually George W. Bush got through. David, for the most part, conservative legal experts seem quite impressed with this list. What was your reaction?
Well, yeah, I mean, if that's his list, his actual list, that's a great list. I mean, some of them are state justices, state Supreme Court justices that it might be a little harder to know how solid they are because they don't actually decide a lot of federal constitutional issues. But if that's his list, it's a good list. But is it his list? you know, with Trump, there's always two things you got to do. You got to realize that one thing he says on a Monday, he can completely change on a Tuesday. And the other is you got to also read the fine print. And so he tweeted out yesterday, last night at almost 8 o'clock, my list of potential U.S. Supreme Court justices was very well received. During the next number of weeks, I may be adding to the list. So that's not actually his list. It's the beginning of a list of people who he may or may not choose. So, you know, as always, he doesn't allow himself to be pinned down. He could change it tomorrow. So who knows? If that's actually his list, good. If it's not, you know, we have no idea of knowing.
David, you've actually written a piece for National Review. It's been a few weeks now saying, no, actually, Donald Trump wouldn't be better than Hillary Clinton. But one of the arguments that you hear a lot from people who are trying to unify the party or just comparing the two candidates say, well, we know Hillary's going to have a terrible Supreme Court nominee from the perspective of conservatives. With Trump, at least there's a chance. We don't know for sure. But whether it's a list like this that he may add some more moderate names to as time goes on, is this a move that you think will win over conservatives or at least some of them?
Well, it will win over some. Whether it should is a whole different question. I don't think it should. And in that article that you lay out, I say, hey, yeah, there is at least a chance he could nominate better judges than Hillary Clinton. But the job of a president is a lot bigger than just nominating judges. It's really interesting that people who are trying desperately to defend this guy keep pointing to judges as if that's the only thing. Well, there's a lot of other things. There's foreign policy, there's trade, there's economic policy. I mean, so, yeah, I would grant that on balance, I would bet that Donald Trump's judicial nominees on average would be better than Hillary Clinton's judicial nominees. But that's only one thing to put on the scale here.
All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And this is not surprising news, but news that folks who are not at all excited about Donald Trump being the Republican nominee are not going to welcome. This is the CNN story. Mitt Romney won't launch a third-party presidential campaign of his own and has stopped trying to recruit somebody else to do it. The 2012 Republican nominee had attempted to recruit a challenger to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, but prospects like Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse said no, and Romney is now dropping his efforts. A source familiar with Romney's thinking told CNN the news was first reported by Yahoo News. It's the latest blow to the Never Trump movement, a list of prospects that include Ben Sasse, Mitt Romney, former Marine Corps General James Mattis, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban, and Ohio Governor John Kasich have all publicly said they are not willing to launch campaigns at this stage. So, David, obviously this would have been a long shot. The extra candidate most likely would not have won. It possibly could have helped some down ballot conservatives. But once again, we're right back where we started a few weeks ago, and it's likely going to be either Trump or Hillary.
Right. I mean, well, I guess we never Trumpers are all Gary Johnson libertarians now. you know, let me just say that this is supremely disappointing, not from the standpoint of thinking that a third party candidacy had a good chance to win, although this is a crazy election cycle where they would be running against the two most disliked presidential candidates in American history. So there would be an opening. I mean, the odds would be long. But look, not one of these people, all of them who are honorable public servants who've done great things for this country, not one of them would decide to take that, what, 5-6 month sacrifice to try to step up and to provide people with an option. And that's deeply disappointing. I'm not surprised that any one individual would decline it. What I am disappointed at is that all of them did. It's a 6 month sacrifice. They would have had an enormous amount of support. They could have perhaps had one of the best third party runs in American history. And who knows, with the right confluence of events, they could have won, and not one of them wanted to do it. That's disappointing to me. And I think a lot of people are looking, had one eye on 2020, and they're thinking they didn't want to ruin anything that was going to happen in the future. But we've kind of got a little bit of a crisis right now with an unfit man running against a woman who's a pathological liar and one of the most fundamentally corrupt politicians we have in America. There's an opening there, but no one took it.
On to the crazy martini now, and this is courtesy of the Daily Wire. And there is legal guidance now in New York City, David, from the office of Mayor Bill de Blasio and specifically the Commission on Human Rights that will crack down on you monetarily and in large sums if you do not use the right pronouns when referring to people's preferred gender. Here is some of the language the commission used. The New York City human rights law requires employers, that includes landlords and all businesses and professionals, to use an employee's, tenants, customers, or client's preferred name, pronoun, and title. Their example is between Ms. and Mrs., regardless of the individual's sex assigned at birth, anatomy, gender, medical history, appearance, or the sex indicated on the individual's identification. Most individuals and many transgender people use female or male pronouns and titles. Some transgender and gender nonconforming people prefer to use pronouns other than he or him, his or she, her and hers, such as they, them, theirs, Z, or her, spelled H-I-R. Footnote, Z and her, spelled H-I-R, are popular gender-free pronouns preferred by some transgender and or gender nonconforming individuals. An example of a violation, intentional and repeated refusal to use an individual's preferred name, pronoun, or title. For example, repeatedly calling a transgender woman him or mister after she has made clear which pronouns and titles she uses. Civil penalties for violations up to $125,000 and up to $250,000 for violations that are the result of willful, wanton, or malicious conduct, unquote. So, David, the speech police are out in full force in New York City.
Now, think about this. In New York City now, this is how crazy things have become. You may be legally required to utter the following statement, to make the following statement. He is pregnant. Think about that. He is pregnant. So in other words, what the city of New York is basically saying is it is decided as a matter of law, all of these arguments about gender identity, and it's going to require you to voice and require you to speak words that you disbelieve to advance that New York City point of view. Now, there's a little thing called the First Amendment here. It's a ordinance that is ripe for challenge. I mean, the very idea that the government of a city can tell you have to use the term Z is remarkable. If we have a First Amendment of any consequence, this thing gets struck down. But it will take a person of unusual bravery. Hey, we're going back to that same theme from the third party challenge. It will take a person of unusual bravery and a little bit of courage to step forward and actually sue over this. Because as we all know, the social sanction, the social media shame storm, the adverse action that comes against anyone who takes on this politically correct, social justice warrior dominated culture, they tend to pay a price.
David, how far do you think the courts are willing to carry the water if this gets placed in the right courts? We've obviously seen it go all the way to the Supreme Court, and the left has won on marriage. We'll see what happens with the transgender accommodation fight that's obviously exploding right now. Are the courts a lost cause, or do you think there's a threshold still somewhere where even those who might be inclined to support the movement are going to say this is ridiculous?
Yeah, I don't think the free speech argument is a lost cause. There's actually been some good there's been good free speech decisions from liberal judges in recent years. So that free speech issue, I think, is a stronger legal issue. Now, the other issue where you're having states suing this new Title IX directive, where the Obama administration is basically amending the statute without an act of Congress to include gender identity. Well, that one is going to be very interesting, because that's going to pit the absolute extreme of the social justice warrior left against traditional American jurisprudence. And we know how liberal judges have kind of come down in those kinds of disputes. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But I think the free speech argument here is very, very strong, and would be strong even in liberal courts. I've been fortunate enough to have quite a few cases that I litigated in the last 20 years in liberal courts on free speech issues on behalf of conservatives, and have been successful. So the free speech doctrine is still out there. It hasn't buckled under quite yet, but, you know, give it time. Maybe it will.
David, I have no idea how we're going to match this crazy martini tomorrow, and in many ways, I hope we don't. But thank you very much for filling in today. We look forward to chatting with you tomorrow as well.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
David French of National Review is in for Jim Garrity. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.